Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Sophie. This is my weekly podcast. How are you? I am your in-house psychiatrist, child psychiatrist, family doctor, dad, all-around nice guy, I think. I'm not sure. Giving you your weekly podcast, and I appreciate all your support, listening, emails, voicemails, tweeting, Facebooking, all that stuff. So I really do appreciate it. And I really think it's great that we can all come together to talk about the things we need to talk about to be better people, better parents, and a better community. This week, our topic is important. It is called and titled The Importance of Social Connection. And I think it's really something that doesn't necessarily get defined or discussed in the detail that we're going to talk about today, because it is the core of who we are, our social connection. We're going to be talking about how big of a problem is loneliness or social isolation, because if you're not connected socially, you're probably lonely and you're probably isolated, whether that's physically isolated or emotionally isolated or both. And it's key to understand why and how that happens, and do we want that? Is it a choice, or does it happen by default? We're also going to be talking about what actually is social isolation. Is social isolation having one friend and seeing that person once a month? Or is social isolation having no friends and not really having any interaction? I think we need to really clarify that and understand that. And also, what is the definition of being lonely? Do you feel lonely? Are you lonely? Do you feel alone? Is there a difference between loneliness and alone? Is there a difference between closeness and loneliness? All of those words need to be defined so we can really understand where we are in our life and where we stand with our social connectedness. And again, thank you for all your calls and all your voicemails. You can always call at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-855-SOPHIE-NOW or 1-855-767-4966. Each caller will receive a free signed copy of Side by Side, my book, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. That's Side by Side, you guys. You got to grab it. So joining me today is our guest expert. Her name is Kira Asatrian. She is a certified, licensed relationship coach, and she's the author of a book that I had the privilege to read before it is going to be released, called Stop Being Lonely. She talks about three simple steps of developing close friendships and deep relationships. So joining me now is Kira. Are you there, Kira?
I am here. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm good. Thank you for joining me.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And, you know, your book, you allowed me to read it ahead of time. It's a great book.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you liked it.
You should be proud of it.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Good job.
It is my first full-length book, so putting myself out there.
Yeah, it's a little scary, but I'm telling you, it's a good book.
Oh, thank you.
So I want to talk about, with our listeners, like, you know, social connection. I mean, there are so many variations of what that could mean. What does it mean to you, and like, why was it such a passion for you to even write about?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I like to say is that there is a bit of a distinction between social isolation and loneliness. They're, of course, related, but essentially social isolation means that you have a lack of people around you or in your life, either by choice or by circumstance. And then loneliness is more of a feeling and an internal experience of feeling like whether or not you have people around, you just don't feel close to them. So one is more of an external experience, one is more of an internal experience.
And so that's the difference, and that's how you define those two. But how do they relate to social connectedness? Because the outcomes of either one of those will lead you to being disconnected socially or connected.
Yeah, either one of them can be positive or negative, essentially. So if one chooses to go and isolate oneself because they want to have a meditative experience or work on a project or something, that can be a very positive experience. Or somebody can be in a large group of people and, you know a lot of people in their life, but have a negative experience of it because they don't feel understood and cared about by those around them.
And is it possible to have the loneliness internal experience in one setting but not in another? Or is it a pervasive kind of thing that happens to an individual no matter where they're at?
Yeah, it can happen to anybody at any time, at any stage of life. And it's becoming very, very common. According to the University of Chicago, they did a recent study. At any given time, one in five Americans is suffering from loneliness. So it's quite pervasive, yeah.
And why do you think that's so, these numbers are so high?
I think there's a couple factors. There's certainly like environmental changes that have happened within the last decade or two. Living arrangements are very different. It's very common to live alone these days. People are delaying marriage and having children for longer than really they ever have before in human history, really. And I talk a lot in the book about how technology is changing the way that we interact with each other, and is changing it in some ways for the worse to make people end up feeling lonelier than they need to be.
So tell me about environmental factors. What do you mean?
Yeah, so on the technology front, I live in San Francisco. I grew up in Silicon Valley. I worked in tech before I started writing. So I'm pretty intimate with that whole world. And really the overarching principle of personal technology, like our phones and our iPads and all that, is efficiency. Meaning every way that you interact with your personal technology should be efficient.
Right.
And that sounds great when it comes to an iPhone, but what ends up happening is that we learn that when we're interacting with something or someone, it needs to be useful, it needs to be fast, it needs to be to an end that's not necessarily the interaction itself. And what we know from, you know, real relationships is that they're not like that. They're messy, they're emotional. And some people have learned these lessons from technology that they almost can't really deal with human relationships anymore.
It's too gushy. Right? It's too emotional.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and there was a study that came out of Australia last year that showed that kids who went to summer camp and stayed away from their personal technology for about a week were better at reading emotional signals on, they were shown faces on pieces of paper.
Right.
And they became more emotionally literate in that 1 week away from technology.
Interesting. So they got closer to being human.
Yeah, basically.
Scary world. I want to read you a email we're getting. We just got in. Thomas from Cincinnati. I do not thrive in social situations. Most people would call me an introvert. However, I do suffer from loneliness. Are there any tricks or ways in which I can become more socially connected without having to go to big social events or really put myself out there, at least at first?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Yeah. I feel like that's almost the heart of the issue. That was absolutely my issue when I was really suffering from loneliness. I'm very introverted as well.
Oh.
And I did not feel comfortable in big social settings. If you have at least one person in your life already whom you know that you could have a closer relationship with, to kind of focus in on that. And if you even can develop a little bit of closeness with just one person who's already in your life or a new person, that can actually greatly alleviate loneliness. And then when it comes to being in social situations, if you're very introverted and also have a tendency towards loneliness, ask questions. Because it takes the pressure off of having to sort of perform or be interesting or what have you. And people love talking about themselves.
Right. So
if you ask somebody else a question, it can really get the conversation going.
Right. And then they don't have time to ask you any.
Sometimes.
That's
but
good.
But it's an icebreaker, you know?
Yes, absolutely. That's great advice. Tell me, from your perspective, do you think that social isolation is an individually induced cause kind of thing, or do you think it's a society induced cause?
I think more often than not, it is a society induced issue. Of course, people have choices. You know, they can decide whether or not to maintain friendships or not. But in general, the environment has changed a lot. One of the big factors, actually, for younger people is that it's very much expected to move a lot within your lifetime. So almost everybody, when they go to college, moves away. And they maintain some of those relationships and they lose some of those relationships. And that kind of didn't happen, you know, a couple decades ago. So that's a huge part of it, I think.
And you mean moving in general from because their family's job changes or situation?
Yeah, either moving for education or for jobs. And also, you know, nowadays it's really seen as a failure to live with your family or to be very dependent on your family at a certain age. And in other cultures and other times and places, that was not the case. Your family was your social network. And that's not really how we think about it anymore.
And so because of that kind of foundation, then people are more apt to move out sooner and then find themselves lonely.
They find themselves lonely. And, you know, when your childhood relationships are sort of ruptured at a certain age, and then we're delaying these more, quote unquote, adult relationships like marriage and having children, there is a period of time where people end up being very lonely.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that. But do you think that people are moving out, in your opinion, too soon or moving away too soon? Or is it done within an appropriate timeline?
I think it's an appropriate timeline. Of course, I'm a product of my own environment, right? So when I went to college, I moved away.
Right.
And so did everybody that I knew.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that we are doing wrong in that regard is just expecting that it's not as big of a change socially as it really is. I think a lot of kids, when they go to college, think, I have my phone, we have a million ways to keep in contact with each other, I won't really lose any of my friends.
But you do. And before you know it, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but you do.
But you know what, that's so true, because I see with a lot of, even my own patients, when they're getting ready to go to college, they're all excited, they have their phone, they're going to stay connected. And by a month or two after the novelty wears off, they're lonely.
Yeah.
While they're living in a dorm of their own peers and hanging out, they're still lonely. And that's what I think people don't realize. It does catch up eventually. So we got to look at that.
Yep. I totally agree.
So do you, you know, how do you know as a person if you are isolating others as opposed to building a relationship with them? Because sometimes it's hard to tell.
If you're isolating yourself versus building a relationship?
Yeah.
Well, I think that it requires checking in with your own needs, because some people do not need as many relationships as other people do. I, for example, can only handle, you know, 5 close friends at a time and no more than that.
And what is why? And does it create too much chaos for you or an anxiety to manage? Or?
Well, no, it's because I put a lot of investment into my relationships. And they're really a priority for me. And some people are not like that. Especially, there tends to be a bit of a gender difference in this regard. Like, women tend to value really deep relationships and smaller numbers, and men tend to be happy with lots of acquaintances. So there's a spectrum there. And it's good to find out kind of where you fall on it and then move towards that number of relationships.
Okay. Hang on. We got a voicemail I want to play you.
Sure.
Hi, I work in consulting, and I don't know, I find that people in my office, we sit in cubicles next to each other, and they'll even just email me questions or updates on work when it could be very easy to come and do it in person. I feel like there's just such a lack of face-to-face interaction, and I feel like we have no camaraderie, and I wish it from a professional, I also wish it from a personal standpoint of making friends at work. You know, I don't want to push people outside of their comfort zones. I feel like not only would we be better professional if we had more interaction, but it would make it just a generally better environment. I would very much appreciate any advice on bettering the situation.
See, and I think that goes to speak toward what you were saying earlier, that society and environmental factors have brought us to a place of feeling lonely or isolated.
Yeah, so that is a great question, and that's absolutely speaking to a truth that's happening in workplaces. There's a new productivity chat tool called Slack that people are saying they're now addicted to, and it's just a chat.
Yeah, it's Flack, FLAC?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And that's just one of many, many examples of ways that people don't really need to interact with each other at work anymore. But there are lots of studies that have come out that show that the more that people actually talk at work about things not related to work, so meaning related to their personal lives, not only are the people happier and more engaged at work, but they're actually more productive at work. So my advice around that would be to just be the change you want to see. You know, if there's something that you could email to somebody or you could get up and speak to them, just start doing it. And you'll start feeling closer to those people that you're interacting with, and they'll feel more comfortable reciprocating.
Yeah, I agree with that. And tell me a little bit more, like, what is closeness in your thinking, and how do we really attain it? Just by doing, like, as you say, be the change you want to see?
And does
closeness really reduce feelings of loneliness, you think?
Yeah, so closeness has a very specific definition in my world. It means direct access to another person's inner world. And the way in which it alleviates loneliness is because the loneliness that I talk about is really an internal loneliness. It's a loneliness of the heart and mind. And it's not alleviated by just being around people. You have to actually feel close to them. So the way that one achieves access to another person's inner world is by what I call knowing and caring. Those are the two actions that one has to do to feel close. And knowing basically means understanding the other person from his or her perspective. And of course, these have to be reciprocated. And then caring is expressing interest and investment in the other person's well-being.
And those two will lead to closeness.
Yeah, they work really amazingly in conjunction, because what it says to somebody when you know them and you care about them is, you know, not only do I see your most true, deepest self, but I also want to keep that most true, deepest self well.
And then that closeness, well, when you know them and you care about them, that kind of meshes together to allow you to then get direct access to them.
Yes.
And then
is
it always reciprocal?
Well, so it's not necessarily. In the book, I talk about ways to determine if somebody is a good, quote-unquote, closeness partner, meaning somebody who has the skills to reciprocate knowing and caring. Not everybody innately has those skills. They can be learned, but there are ways of evaluating if somebody will be good at reciprocating those activities.
And can you give me, like, the mini version of that? Like, what would we tell listeners is a quick, easier way to assess somebody for their closeness factor or skill?
Yeah, so the number one thing to look for in terms of knowing is if the other person is willing to what I call self-disclose, meaning tell things about themselves, about their inner world, and not just, you know, I like to play tennis on the weekends, but more substantive
things close to their heart.
Right, exactly. And then in terms of caring, the big thing is really emotional awareness. You know, if they are able to feel things, that's the big requirement for caring.
Got it. Okay, so I want to read you another email. Alex from San Diego is asking us, I have a lot of friends, but recently I took an inventory of all of them. And I don't know if I could definitely say I have a quote-unquote best friend. I don't feel comfortable sharing my real feelings or thoughts with most people because I'm afraid of what they might think. I'm a people pleaser, and I don't want to turn people off and don't want to turn them off with any conflicting ideas I may have, so I kind of just try to please them. Still, I want to remain really connected to people, but I don't know how to force myself to open up. Help.
Yeah, so that is a very classic example of the kind of loneliness that I'm talking about, the kind that's not really about having friends or not having friends.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a crowded room with people. You could say five of these people are really close to me, and you're still feeling disconnected.
I think that part of it is because it is risky and a bit vulnerable to really expose your inner world in the way that I suggest. And it's totally understandable to be nervous about that and feel like you might turn people off if you showed your deepest self.
Right.
But the payoff is really great. And I would expect that if he wanted it badly enough, that that person would have somebody already in their group of people that was trustworthy enough to expose some of his inner world to.
Right. And I mean, sometimes it's just as simple as saying you got to take that step, even if it's uncomfortable.
That's right. Yeah. And it very well might be. Yeah.
And what do they do if they get hurt? Just should they give up?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a possibility. No, they should not give up because there are wonderful people in the world. And being lonely is extremely bad for you. Like chronically lonely people have health issues on par with people who smoke and are obese. And there are real consequences to being lonely. So even if you, you know, choose somebody who ended up not being the right person to expose yourself to, try again.
There's others. Yeah.
There's others, and it's a learning experience.
It is, and it's not always going to be comfortable.
No, it's not.
So thank you for all of this information. Tell me a little bit about you and about this really great book and when we're going to be able to get our hands on it.
Sure. So I am a relationship coach by trade. I've been doing that for the last couple of years. Like I said before that, I was in technology in Silicon Valley. And I work a lot with couples and with startup founding teams. So typically when startups get started,
yeah,
there's usually a little founding team of two or three people, and I coach those teams as well. And then the book came about because when I was doing training to become a relationship coach, I was studying all different kinds of relationships, like, you know, couples therapy, but also business negotiations and mediation. And I started to realize that the things that brought people closer, regardless of what type of relationship it was, were really pretty uniform across the board. And that's where the idea of closeness and knowing and caring came about, was from looking at all different types of relationships from different perspectives.
Yeah. I mean, it only makes sense. I mean, a business deal or a marriage isn't going to happen until you're on a level of comfort and knowing of somebody to wherever it's comfortable.
That's absolutely right.
It's not all numbers on a paper for a business deal, no matter what anybody thinks.
That's right.
So it's great. So when can we have this book?
So it's coming out February 16th, 2016, and it'll be everywhere, bookstores, Amazon, etc.
And do you have a website or somewhere we can reach to you if we have questions?
I do. My website is my name, KiraAsatryan.com. And it's kind of a hard name. I can spell it out if that's useful.
I got it for you. A-S-A-T-R-Y-A-N. I'll be spelling it for everybody. Don't worry.
Awesome.
And you're going to be everywhere. And I think that we will always reach back to you because this is a key information point for all of us. And, you know, people are going to really respond to this. So are you open to coming back?
Oh, of course. Yeah, this has been great.
Thank you. Anything you think we should have asked you that we didn't ask you?
I think that my last little point that I would want to make is that if you have listeners out there that are really suffering from loneliness at this moment, the first thing to do right now is to stop blaming yourself for it, because that was something that I struggled with for a very long time, was thinking that my loneliness was a character flaw or my oversensitivity or what have you. And it's really not. It's something that can be overcome, and it's not your fault.
That's a great point, because people need to relinquish themselves and free themselves before they can even begin to grow.
Yes,
but tell me something, where in all of this could something as simple as this could be an anxiety disorder and medication could fix it?
I mean, that's not, you know, a opposed idea, and they could be related. And there is some evidence that social anxiety is a component of loneliness. But I would still recommend trying out the knowing and caring route, at least in addition.
Yep. And do you think there are any other therapies that could help support the knowing and the caring route if they're really hard startups for people?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do have a predilection, I guess you could say, towards CBT, because a lot of what prevents people from exposing themselves is, you know, negative core beliefs about their selves. So working on some of those thoughts and beliefs can be helpful.
Well, I mean, and by CBT, you mean cognitive behavioral therapy for anyone who doesn't understand that.
Right.
But I think, like what you said earlier, that you want people to understand it's not their fault and to free themselves. It's partly why they're tied up, is because they don't believe in themselves. So CBT can be helpful to get rid of that negative understanding or thought process you may have of yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Kira, I could talk all day. So thank you very much. I appreciate it, and we'll be looking for your book.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, everybody, that was Kira Asatryan. She is a certified relationship coach. She is the author of a new book coming out in January 2016 called Stop Being Lonely, Three Simple Steps to Developing Close Friendships and Deep Relationships. Her website is www.kira, K-I-R-A, Asatryan, Asatryan.com. Hit her up, ask her questions, buy her book. It's really good. So I think it's a really important topic, social connectedness, loneliness, closeness, all that stuff. And I think 4 points I would want you to take away today are, first of all, understanding the difference between loneliness and like social isolation. Social isolation is something we can do. It's an outside thing. We can lock ourselves away from others because either it's too loud or we're too sad for a reason or you know, we need to be alone in some quiet space to think or to do some work. But it's an actual physical act outside of our body that we can do. We isolate ourselves. But loneliness, on the other hand, is an internal thing. It's a feeling. We feel lonely. And it's not something necessarily we have control over. So that's the difference, and that's important to understand between social isolation and loneliness. The second important key to take away from today is to understand the research, which shows us that about 1 out of 5 people suffer from loneliness, and that's a pretty significant number. And I don't even know if people even realize they're lonely because there are so many factors that feed into causing it, from environmental factors to, you know, the way society functions now. It's often common to live alone. We have technology that keeps us alone on our phone as we're crossing the street. We don't even need to look up to see if we're going to get hit. We have a lot of ways to really promote loneliness and may not even be aware of it. So looking at the research and seeing that, that's a red flag that we need to do something to become aware of it and fix it within ourselves. The other part of that is how society plays into that. And it's an induced, oftentimes, society phenomenon, this loneliness. So take a look at that kind of stuff and really move out of that place of where you tend to see yourself doing these one-on-one behaviors where it's you and your phone or you and your iPad or you're watching television or you're on the phone. These kinds of things, believe it or not, even though they're really common, are ways to promote isolation and loneliness. And before you know it, you're feeling lonely and you don't even know it. I also think it's important to take a look at some of the research that supports the medical problems that go along with loneliness that we may not even be aware of that are very similar to the medical problems that come from obesity, hypertension, smoking. Again, negative behaviors in our life have negative medical impacts as well. It's important also, as a key point to take away, understanding what is the difference between closeness and loneliness, and how do we fix loneliness? Well, we fix it by being close to people. Well, does that mean we become best friends with everybody? No. What that means is we have to start to practice getting closer to people so that we can then get rid of that feeling of loneliness. If you're on your phone, you can't practice closeness to get rid of loneliness. So putting things down that isolate you, learning how to be close with others, and then that will lower your loneliness. And how do you get close to others? 2 key factors, Kira tells us, which is knowing them and caring about them. So really asking questions and understanding them and showing in your behavior that you care will bring you closer to someone so that you do not feel as lonely as you do. And before you know it, you got some relationships growing right in front of your face. So looking at those things is key to be able to build your life and get rid of loneliness and social isolation. So that was a really great podcast. I think there's a lot of good information in there. I thank you all for listening, calling in, voicemails, emails today. These podcasts are always available to you on my website and on iTunes for free. My website is www.drsophie.com. My phone app is available in the iTunes store, so go check it out. That's free as well. Voicemail is there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-855-767. Remember, every caller gets a free signed copy of my book, Side by Side, The Revolutionary Mother-Daughter Program for Conflict-Free Communication. Also, follow me on Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr and Instagram and all that stuff, because it all feeds in together and you'll know what's going on. And there's some really great polls that we'll be doing to get your assessments and see what you think about things. iTunes is always there for you. And download that full version of Andy Grammer's Keep Your Head Up. It's a great song. The most important thing for me is for you to sweep.